Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
Wherever you look these days, there's a plethora of diet books advising us on how best to lose weight, fasting, there's keto, there's all sorts of diets, juice diet, sugar-free, carb-free. The fasting one's been around for a while, hasn't it? The Michael Mosley sort of fasting 5-2 kind of thing. Some people swear by it. Most of us, I think, have had a crack at all of these at various points and thought they worked for a bit, and then they don't. The list goes on. Maybe our sticking power is not very good. My next guest has used more than 30 years of actual research, actual clinical practice, and accumulated knowledge on healthy longevity using an evidence-based approach to give us some insight into losing those kilos for good. In 2020, Professor Luigi Fontana released a book called The Path to Longevity, How to Reach 100 with the Health and Stamina of a 40-Year-Old. Rather than trying to treat sick people with medicine, Professor Fontana set out to discover how we can avoid the chronic illnesses in our society and live long and healthy lives. And to accompany the book, Professor Fontana has now released a manual called The Manual of Health, Longevity and Wellbeing. It's drawn upon the latest science to give you three keys to longevity: recipes for a healthy diet rich in flavour, that is, eat well, simple exercise plans. I know you say, I know that, yeah, but how many of us do it? And also a well-being guide, which includes things like getting enough sleep and so on. It may not be rocket science, but it is what's available for you to improve your life. Professor Fontana is from the Faculty of Medicine and Health at the University of Sydney and joins us this evening. Luigi, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you for having me.
Do you really think you want to get to 100? You can't get to 100 and be healthy and fit like a 40-year-old, can you? No. What 100-year-olds are like that?
Is a provocative title, of course. Mm. But, you know, the data we have, you know, before joining the University of Sydney, I lived for 18 years in US, where I was a professor and the scientific director of the longevity program of Washington University in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And there, you know, we studied the mechanisms of aging. You know, as you were mentioning before, you know, there are all these fad diets that they come and go, and people, they lose, you know, maybe 5-10 kilos and then they regain 5-10 kilos. And so we studied more the mechanisms in animals. Mm. And so we found that basically diet and exercise are acting on these key metabolic and molecular pathways that are allowing animals to live up to 50% more. So 50% more means, you know, that for a human being, instead of 80, will be 120, 130 years. And these animals, not only they were living longer, but they were also living much healthier. So many of the common chronic disease, cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, dementia, were either totally prevented or delayed big ways. And so from a mechanistic point of view, we know that it's possible. And even in humans, we know that centenarians, a third of the centenarians, they don't develop any chronic disease before the age of 100. Mm. So even in humans, you know, we know that biologically it's possible.
Although getting to 100, of course, I mean, although people are living longer, aren't they? I mean, in some cases, quite a bit longer. I think the topping out age for males these days is well into the 80s. Now, that never used to be the case. And for women, perhaps older than that as well. Isn't it also the case, though, that, of course, as the population has aged, we've seen concurrently, as you've just mentioned, the rise of other, perhaps genetically related illnesses, such as dementia, which we didn't know about so much before because people didn't live that long.
Yeah, you're right. You know, in 1850, the average lifespan was 45 years, okay, the life expectancy. Now, for men in, you know, developed countries like Australia, it's 80 for men and 84 for women. Mm. So definitely, you know, we have doubled lifespan. The problem, you know, that the health span has not increased as much. And because of the epidemic of obesity, type 2 diabetes, and many other cardiometabolic cancer, and as you were mentioning, dementia, cognitive impairment, because as people, they're going to live longer, there is a huge problem in terms of dementia. But dementia is not a genetic, like many diseases, you know, there is a genetic component, even for diabetes, for hypertension. But, you know, we know that lifestyle, your lifestyle, especially in your 40s, 50s, is extremely important in basically changing your risk of developing dementia, unless you have one of these rare genetic familiar forms, you know, early dementia. But most of the forms of dementia are due to obesity, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, inflammation in your midlife that is basically causing damage to the brain and increasing the risk of dementia if you're going to live long enough.
There's a life. I mean, humans have a span, don't they?
Yes.
We don't live forever, and even with our best endeavours, we can't live a hugely lot longer. What do you think's reasonable in this argument? Because we now, that's right, regularly get to our mid-80s. Lots of people do. That's
yes.
not necessarily considered in some circumstances even to be old, although it probably is. But what do you think's reasonable to expect, given if you look after yourself?
Look, you know, the technology is advancing at a very fast pace. Mm. And so I think, you know, that in the next 10, 15 years, there are going to be major advancement, and it's not going to be rare, you know, to live to 100. And only probably 50 years ago, it was very rare.
It was
exceptional.
Extremely unusual.
Yes, very extremely unusual. Now it's becoming more and more common. But I think, you know, you don't want to miss the train. So you want to be in good health to catch the train of this extended longevity, but coupled with health, you know, because nobody wants to live, you know, to 100, demented, you know, depressed.
No,
and
that's the question also that a lot of people ask us. I don't want a long life. I want a good life. I want a good and healthy life.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily a long life.
But if you're not investing in your early years and middle age years, your chance of living a good life, a healthy life, they are very, very slim.
When do you think? That's interesting. So, what do you think is important here? I remember because I used to be a smoker, of course, like lots of people of my generation. We all smoked. In fact, it was hard to find anybody who didn't at one stage amongst my generation. But pretty much all of us gave up, myself included. I was encouraged at that stage by a statistic. I don't know whether it's still true, which said that if you did give up within about 15 or 20 years of giving up, this is if you gave up in your 30s, which is when I gave up, that within over 15 or 20 years, your risk profile was pretty much approaching what people who hadn't smoked were approaching. I thought, that's encouraging. I don't know whether that's still true, but the idea, in other words, that there was a chance here that if you gave up early enough, that you could be back to the starting blocks again.
Definitely.
Is that the case with other health choices, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, that definitely, you know, at any age you can improve your metabolic molecular health. You know, it's not gonna be the same than, you know, if you have been healthy all your life. But definitely, you know, for smoking there are lots of evidence that, you know, if you stop smoking within 20 years, you substantially reduce the risk of developing lung cancer, cardiovascular disease, and many other cancer, and even dementia, because smoking is a major risk factor for many of these chronic diseases. But, you know, what we discovered in the last few years is that excessive adiposity, so if you gain weight, especially central obesity, you know, the belly fat, has a huge pro-aging, pro-disease effect, because this fat, you know, this excessive fat, you know, we have in our abdomen is producing pro-inflammatory cytokines, so it's causing inflammation, is causing insulin resistance, that is a major driver of aging. We have clearly shown that in multiple studies, is changing your lipids, you know, increasing your cholesterol, reducing your good cholesterol, the HDL cholesterol, is increasing blood pressure, and many other factors that are promoting cancer. So one of the, if we have to start to say what, you know, people should do, an important point is to try to avoid weight gain as you age, and especially abdominal fat.
So it's pretty hard, isn't it? I mean, because generally that's what you do. I mean, generally as you get older, you put on weight, don't you? In fact, some have even calculated it, but at sort of half a kilo a year.
Yeah, more or less. But that's not inevitable. If you look some photos, you know, only 20, 30, 40 years here in Australia or in US, people, they, you know, they were not gaining as much weight as today. So now you have a lot of obesity even in teenagers, and that was not the case only, you know, 15, 20 years.
No, I think that's true. And we've discussed it many times in the program. You know, this is one of Australia's, and in fact, if we're talking about nutrition and health, this is probably the big issue that, you know, we don't seem to have found any way of dealing with this massive problem, which is obesity. And if I think people who are older look around and think, people did not used to look like this.
Yeah.
You know, today, if you look around,
yeah,
most people you see, this may be an exaggeration, I don't think so, most people you see are overweight.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we so are.
That never used to be the case.
Yeah, it was. It's close to 60, 70% in Australia. In US, it's a bit more. You know, overweight or obese together, it's 2/3 of the population.
Mm. And if you look, pretty frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And again, you know, the worst.
Akin to a major health crisis.
Yeah. And again, you know, the link that people have to understand, you know, that, you know, we have clearly demonstrated, you know, that this excessive adiposity, central adiposity, is not only increasing the risk of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, but is really fundamentally linked with accelerated aging. Mm. So you are accumulating more and more damage and accelerating the aging of the entire organism. And it's not inevitable. And the problem is, you know, well, it's not only diet. You know, a lot of people, they just concentrate of diet. You know, it's a wide range of lifestyles that are necessary.
What's your view about this? Because there seems to be a view that's quite common these days amongst health experts too, who say, oh, well, you know, like it's not a choice anymore. People, you know, obesity is not a matter of choice anymore. It's a matter of, you know, it's society's fault in some way. And, you know, I understand the arguments for that, the big drivers of fast foods, the way that foods are marketed and what foods are that are marketed. I get all that, but there seems to be a view amongst health professionals, I'm interested in your view about this, is that we almost can't stop it anymore. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't agree. I think, again, you know, apart from diet, you know, these ultra processed food and, you know, all these sugary beverages, you know, all these refined flours and fat, and it's everywhere. You know, people that are also exercising much less. You know, there are people that they take car, elevator. They don't do enough exercise. You know, to you should at least exercise every other day, better. Every day with different type of exercise, engaging in some fun exercise, you know, playing soccer with your friends, volleyball, you know, a lot of different games. You know, exercise shouldn't be only, you know, on a gym, on a treadmill, you know, but, you know, there is a lot of dancing. There is a lot of activities, you know, where you can expend a lot of energy instead of a lot of people, they spend a lot of time in front of their TV or in front of their iPhone or iPad. So if I look at my son, you know, my son is 14 years old. Even when he's sitting on a sofa, he's moving, he's jumping, he's fidgeting. You know, instead of a lot of people, as they get older, they sit on the chair and they don't move one finger. So it's a combination, again, of very little exercise. Half an hour, a couple of days per week is not enough, you know, to keep up your metabolism.
So, in other words, you would say, yes, it is a choice.
A choice?
Obesity is a choice.
I'm trying
to get to your view about this, because it's a common thing, this idea that, you know, people are stigmatized for body image and so on. The movement seems to be that if you are overweight, it's not necessarily your fault. It's the fault of society in some way. I mean, maybe that's right.
It's very complicated. I think, you know, there are a number of factors that are definitely personal, but there are a lot of social pressure. There is a lot of, you know, a lot of forces at play that makes things complicated. And I think, you know, one of the main one, and, you know, we wrote some papers with my friend and colleague who was the former director of the Department of Nutrition of Harvard in Boston, that basically we should teach in schools, you know, in primary school, secondary school, university, a topic that is basically the understanding of how what we do, our diet, our exercise, you know, how we train our mind, you know, mindfulness, sleep, how they work, how they change our cells, our organs. And, you know, we teach our kids about grammar, math, geography.
I think kids get taught these things. Kids get taught what healthy eating is. Is there anybody in Australia?
Not in a mechanistic way.
But Luigi, is there anybody in Australia who doesn't understand what healthy food is? When shown pictures of a packet of chips or a fresh vegetable, they know what's healthy.
Look, you know, they probably know.
The fact that they choose the bag of chips is another matter, though. And that's what I'm interested in, as to what your view about why that is occurring.
You know, look, you know, when I practice as a doctor and I see my patients, you know, when that you tell them, you know, how to cook, you know, some vegetables, some beans and some whole grains, they have no clue. Very little. They don't know how to put together, you know. They are used, you know, to cook their hamburgers or, you know, the roast beef and this and that, you know. I don't think, you know, there is a superficial knowledge. Mm. Yes, you know, everybody can say, you know, if you drink a soft drink or no one thinks
a can of Coke is healthy.
Exactly. But, you know, but
plenty of people drink them.
But how can you fix a healthy meal? You know, how many people they really know how to fix a healthy meal that is also tasty?
Mm.
You know, my patients, you know, many of them, you know, they tell me, you know, I have no idea. Indeed, you know, now as the new scientific director of the Charles Perkins Center RPA Clinic at the University of Sydney, we are now starting a program. We just hired a chef. And apart from the dietitian, the exercise physiologist, we're also going to offer, you know, some healthy cooking classes.
Hmm.
Because people, you know, you believe people, they know, but they don't. It's a very superficial knowledge.
Hmm. Why don't they know?
Again, because, as you said before, at the beginning, every other day there is a new diet. Can be the 5-2, the 16-8, you know, the keto, the high protein, the South Beach. Every few months, every few years, you know, there is a major fat diet, and people, I think, you know, they are confused. They try this diet, and people, they don't know that, you know, when you lose weight only with diet, we have published that in a couple of important scientific papers, you are lowering your T3. T3 is one of the key thyroid hormones. Mm-hmm. And by lowering the T3, you lower resting metabolic rate, meaning that, you know, you have to eat very, very little, you know, to keep your body weight low.
Right.
Instead of, we have clearly shown that, you know, if you lose the same amount of body weight and body fat with exercise, you're not lowering T3 and you're not lowering resting metabolic rate. So these drastic diets, yes, you know, maybe you can achieve, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10% weight loss, but because you are lowering your resting metabolic rate through these mechanisms, unless you are super, super, super dedicated and, you know, you have a very strong willpower, metabolically you're going to regain that weight. As soon as you relax yourself, having this very low resting metabolic rate, you're going to regain weight. So exercise is an essential tool if you want to maintain, because every time you lose weight, you lose body fat and lean mass, and then, you know, mostly you regain body fat.
Mm-hmm.
So this yo-yo-yo is
what do you think of the 5-2 diet? I mean, Michael Mosley is a scientist himself, and he popularized the diet, wrote a book about it, and sold millions of books off the back of it. It's become a very, very popular, widely followed eating regime. I don't think he would even call it a diet. He would say, this is just a way to eat. What do you think of the, of that 5-2 regime?
Michael Mosley is not a scientist. He's a doctor. He's a producer. You know, the 5-2 diet was...
You'd describe a doctor as a scientist, wouldn't
no.
you?
No. A scientist is someone who is an academic who performs studies and publish data in journal, scientific journals.
Mm.
And a doctor is not typically publishing scientific papers, so he's just a practitioner.
Mm.
A scientist is someone who is designing studies, running the studies, and publish the data in scientific journals. But apart from that, the 5-2 diet was launched because of the of a documentary that I was part of.
Mm-hmm.
So if you watch the Eat Fast and Live Longer, I was one of the two major characters. So Michael Mosley came to interview me when I was working at Washington University. Mm-hmm. And after that, he launched a book. And as you said, you know, he sold millions of copies. And but there were no data because when he interviewed me about, you know, the in the documentary, I was just talking about my data on people that were doing long-term calorie restriction without malnutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So my data were on people that reduced their calories with optimal nutrition. So every meal they were reducing by 20% calorie intake, but eating lots of whole grains, vegetables, fruits, beans, fish, and so he took, you know, my data of on humans on calorie restriction. That, by the way, in animals, calorie restriction without malnutrition is the most powerful intervention to extend lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
You can extend lifespan even in monkeys up to 50%, okay?
Mm.
And then he put together the data of Walter Longo from USC on mice on fasting. And then he put together these two concepts and he published a book suggesting that the 5-2 diet was an intervention to extend lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
We just published a paper because after that I designed and performed a randomized clinical trial. We just published a few weeks ago in Aging Biology, is one of the top aging journal in the world, showing that this was a 5-2 or a 4-3 diet. So people, they could eat, if their BMI was between 24 and 28, so they were slightly overweight, they had to fast 2 days a week. If their BMI was between 28 and 35, 3 times a week,
mm-hmm.
non-consecutive days.
Mm-hmm.
And in my study, the fasting to help people to comply was a vegetable fasting. They could eat non-starchy vegetables as much as they liked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So cooked raw with 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Remember, 1 tablespoon of olive oil is 120 calories, vinegar or lemon and some spices. And in terms of weight loss, the results are fantastic. On average, in 6 months in my study, people lost 8% of their body weight, 16% body fat measured by DEXA. The superstar lost 20 kilos in 6 months. However, because we were not interested only in the effects of the 5-2 or 4-3 diet on weight loss, we also measure some markers of healthy aging. Right. One is inflammation, and we didn't see any change whatsoever of C-reactive protein is a marker of inflammation and other cytokines, and a very minor changes in insulin sensitivity and glucose tolerance. So the message is that, yes, you can lose weight, but from a metabolic point of view, very little changes.
So, okay, got that. So the goal is, so in other words, that's right. So 5-2, you'd say, is just like a diet, like any other diet, that of course you can lose weight. You can lose weight on any diet.
Exactly.
But the question is, does it change the way that your body metabolizes things and therefore does it change the way your body is going to look like permanently? The answer is no.
No. That's the results of this study we did.
And
you
this
know.
Is not a matter of opinion. This is a matter of science. Yeah.
These are published data in a top medical journal.
Does any diet, has any diet ever worked?
In terms of?
Changing metabolic rate permanently.
Well, you know, some of the people have been studying in US that have been on a reducing calories with a optimal diet, meaning a lot of fibers. Yes, it worked.
Sorry, yeah, maybe I should refine this question.
Yes,
of course, some diets could you know make you lose weight. But when I say a diet, I suppose I'm talking about, you know, Israeli army diets, keto diets, all these things. In other words, there is a magic ingredient or there's this particular thing. Is the only real path to losing weight is to eat less food and make your body work harder to change its metabolic rate. That's the only thing that's in the... And that's got to be a permanent change. You can't just go on it for 6 months.
With exercise, yeah. As I said, you know, if you are trying, you know, to lose weight or to keep your body weight, to prevent weight gain as you age, exercise must be an essential component.
Yeah, you're a big fan. You're a fan of this, aren't you? Because there's some contrary views that are floating around saying that, particularly when you're older, that you should be careful about a lot of forms of exercise, like don't lift heavy weights, for example, or don't run, or don't try and lift weights above your head and other things like this. What do you think of that generally? Are you a fan of vigorous exercise even into old age?
No, look, you know, the best form of exercise is moderate exercise. Mm. You shouldn't stress. You know, we know that, you know, people... Some of the study also we did when I was working at Washington University, people who are over-exercising, we know that's not good. It can cause cardiac fibrosis, a lot of problems. So you shouldn't over-exercise. Mm. But you should exercise at the moderate, especially the endurance. There are different forms of exercise and different type of exercise that are achieving different.
I mean, if you're over 65 or 70, should you run or should you just walk? Or you'd say there's no fixed answer to that?
I don't think it depends. You know, you should talk with your doctor and you should understand what are your problems, you know, and, you know, your heart, if it's in a good, you know, you can do a CT scan. You know, there are some tests that can be done, you know, to understand how you are physically, you know, so if your joints are okay, if your heart is okay. But, you know, if you are biking, swimming, jogging without, you know, doing, you know, super crazy long running, I think it's fine, you know.
What about, because you're big on strength training, so you think lifting weights is good, even into your old age?
Yeah, you know, not huge amount of, you know, you don't have to think about, you know, these bodybuilders who try to become, you know, huge, you know, but, you know, definitely bodybuilding, some weight lifting, you know, based on your strength and your age, is important to prevent sarcopenia and osteoporosis, because a lot of people, especially if you're going to live a long life, if you lose too much muscle mass and bone, you are at risk of bone fracture and then you're at risk of basically frailty, and you don't want to. And so exercise, some resistant exercise together with flexibility. So the top is endurance. So everything that is, you know, jogging, swimming, biking, dancing, everything, you know, is increasing your heart rate is good.
Mm. Professor Luigi Fontana's with us. It's the most interesting conversation. He's from the Faculty of Medicine and Health at the University of Sydney. Luigi is not a diet promoter. He's not promoting diets and he's not suggesting that he has a brand new diet that'll fix you. This is one of the interesting things about his book, Healthy Longevity and Wellbeing. He's not just saying he is a fad new idea. He's saying that the science behind these things, including Michael Mosley's 5-2 diet, simply is that they are fads and they don't actually work long term to change people's metabolic rate. And if you want to reduce weight in the long term, that's what you have to do. You have to change your metabolic rate.
Look, you know, I think, you know, fasting has some space, you know, in your lifestyle. But what I'm saying, what these data are showing of my paper and other papers, you know, that the idea that, you know, 5 days a week you eat whatever you want
and then
2 days a week you eat 500 calories or whatever you want, it doesn't work, because what we are finding is the composition the quality of what you eat in the 5 days is deeply influencing the metabolic response to weight loss.
Getting, yeah, I got it. And this is based, everyone, on science. This is based on Professor Fontana's and others' actual controlled scientific studies. Just going through your manual, essentially there are three elements to it, and I don't think anyone will be surprised by what they are, but that is, number one is eating, number two is exercise, and number three you say is well-being, which we'll get to in a moment. Let's start with eating. You're firmly in the camp that the best example we have of healthy eating is generally the principles of the Mediterranean diet. Is that right?
Yes, let's say, there is consensus in the scientific world that, the Mediterranean diet is one of the healthiest diet. But you don't have to be, anything. The Okinawan diet, in Okinawa, you have a lot of centenarians. Mm. And the Okinawan diet, the people in Okinawa, they are not eating the Mediterranean diet, but they are eating a diet that is rich in sweet potatoes, these purple sweet potatoes, tofu, beans, some fish, lots of vegetables, some fruits, and they eat meat, maybe once a week or less. So even if it's not Mediterranean, the principles of a very high fiber, lots of legumes, non-refined, minimally refined whole grains, and lots of different type of vegetables, seeds, some nuts, some fish, it's the same.
So go through that again. So when we're eating, I know your books contain lots of recipes and we don't have time to go through those, but so just say those again. So lots of fresh vegetables.
Lots of different type of fresh vegetable.
Lots of colour on the plate, in other words.
Beg your pardon?
Lots of colour on the
plate. Yeah, lot of colour on the plate, yes. Then, beans. People are not eating enough beans. Can be, lentils, chickpeas, tofu, legumes.
Yep, legumes, yeah.
Whole grains.
Whole grains, so this means what? Unprocessed rice?
Yeah, organic brown rice farro and millet, barley, and whole wheat bread, done with 100% whole wheat flour.
Wholemeal bread, yeah.
And then some seeds.
So nuts and seeds.
Nuts, fish is very important, three times a week.
Oily fish, is that important? Huh? Is oily fish important?
Yeah.
Sardines, salmon, tuna.
The sardines and the small fishes are better, especially the blue fish, because they are more rich in omega-3 fatty acids. Okay. And compared to tuna, the problem with tuna nowadays is the concentration of mercury. So the fish that are very big at the top chain, the biological chain, they tend to accumulate more mercury.
Okay.
Yeah.
And meat. Yes, meat's okay, but don't eat so much of it.
Yeah, in the typical Mediterranean diet, they were eating meat once a week, once every 10 days. Yes.
As a side issue, alcohol. What do you say about alcohol? We've lived with it for 5,000 years, so humans are very used to it.
In the past, it was pretty, kind of rare. So if you tell me what is the science about alcohol... it's okay to drink alcohol, here and there, but not every day. So that's what the science is telling us. You know, every day, even the 2 glasses for men and 1 for women is too much, especially for cancer. There are data showing that, there is no low limit for the risk of cancer. Mm. Of course, it's always a risk. It's like cigarette. There is a risk. It's not, that it's like a death sentence.
Sure. 1-300-800-222 is the number. We'll get on to exercise and well-being in a moment. Let's take a call or two. Phil's been hanging on there. Hi, Phil.
Oh, g'day, Phil. How are you?
Not bad.
I just wanted to add to the... I missed the scientist on his name. I missed it at the start.
Professor Luigi Fontana is his name.
Oh, very nice to have him on board. He's saying great stuff. I just wanted to add to the Mediterranean diet that often goes... What goes missing from people's mindset is that the traditional Mediterranean diet has almost, every second day there's a religious festival that requires fasting. And the fasting we're talking about isn't an absence of food, but it is, as Professor's saying, vegetables are always part of the diet. and then you have a varied approach depending on what the saint day is, and it's typically, you know, no dairy, no meat, but it always allows for a good spread of vegetables, and that is really fundamental to the Mediterranean diet, not just the actual, you know, foods that we typically join with that diet. It's also the fact that there's a lot of fasting going on. And yeah, so that's fundamental to the Mediterranean diet, which I never hear being mentioned. Yeah, thanks for having that.
Yeah, no, thanks, Phil. Thanks, Phil. Where are we? David's on the line from the Sunshine Coast too. Hi, David.
Yeah, good evening.
Your question?
Yes, I guess the professor, is he aware of the China study written by T. Collins Campbell, PhD, and Thomas M. Campbell II, and it's headed the most comprehensive study of nutrition ever conducted. I actually have the book in my hand. It's titled The China Study. Is the professor aware of it? And the other question is, has he heard of the Hunzas who lived in the Himalayas up to the age of 120?
Luigi?
Yeah, I know the China study. I know also Campbell, you know, we corresponded, you know, we know each other. And it's an interesting concept. There are some issues with the concept that, you know, being vegetarian, as I discuss in my books, is sure. The solution for health and longevity, because you can be vegetarian eating a lot of refined carbs, a lot of sugary beverages and refined oils. And, you know, we did study in US where you can be a vegan, but if you are eating super processed vegan lasagna, pizza, stuff like that, even if you don't touch animal products, you are still at high metabolic risk of developing obesity, diabetes, and many.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but in principle, in some way, the question is that we don't have a definite answer. So let's say, you know, that you are almost a vegetarian, but you're eating fish and you're eating meat, you know, here and there. Is this bad for your health? And I don't think there is any data on that. And so that's the only issue I have, you know, with the China study and the philosophy of Campbell and other doctors and researchers who are in some way claiming that the only way for health is being vegetarian or even vegan.
Sure. And are you aware of the Hunzas in the Himalayas?
I read books, but there are no scientific data supporting that these people in the Hunza, you know, they live to 120 years. There are books, but no scientific paper that at least I'm aware of.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Thanks, David. 1-300-800-222. Is this one of the things that bedevils this whole field in a way, Luigi, is that people say, well, I've been on this thing for a while and it works? That's part of the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as a scientist, I've been talking with people who have been raw food vegetarian, so only eating raw vegetables, and they say, you know, that's the only, because if you eat cooked food, it's toxic. Then, you know, you talk with people who have been on a primordial diet, only raw meat, raw cheese, raw milk. And they say, you know, that's fantastic. It's working for me. So in my career, I've met a lot of people that, you know, they were firmly believers, you know, that their diet was the best. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is part of the problem. What you're saying is that you're trying to put together in your manual an approach based on the evidence that we have.
Yeah. Again, you know, what we are trying to do is to say, okay, what are the biological pathways that are controlling health and longevity? So it's a different, you know, approach. You know, instead of saying, you know, let's look at the diet, can be any type of diet, and see if people, they lose weight or, you know, they improve, you know, their lipids. Our approach is in nature. If we use science to understand what are the factors that are regulating the accumulation of metabolic molecular damage and therefore health span and lifespan, what are those? And so what we found is that calories are important, as I said. Proteins are also important, especially branched-chain amino acids and sulfur amino acids like methionine. Mm. And we found that the composition of the gut microbiota is also very important. And exercise is important because it's acting through different pathways that are, for example, increasing BDNF, that is a neurotrophic factor, is important for memory and for depression. Exercise is improving insulin sensitivity much more than diet, than calorie restriction. So insulin sensitivity is extremely important, not only for the prevention of diabetes, but also for slowing down aging. And so there are other pathways. So the approach, you know, is slightly different. And because we are developing these biomarkers that are going to measure your biological age, are you younger or older than your chronological age? Can you measure your biological age? And can you use these biomarkers that, you know, we are developing to measure if an intervention, a diet or a combination of lifestyle, is really slowing down aging? Because otherwise we are just, you know, testing diets randomly.
That's right. That's right, exactly. Professor Luigi Fontanas is with us. Settle an argument for us, Luigi. Lucy from Chatswood says, please, Professor Fontana, settle an argument for me. Do push-ups count as resistance training?
Yes.
Yes is the answer. There you go, Lucy. You've won the argument if you're on that side of it. Wow. Let's take another call. Jania from Coffs Harbour. Hi, Jania.
Hello, good evening.
Hi.
Hello?
Yes, hi. What's your question, Jania?
I'm wondering about on our metabolism, the effects of cortisol levels when they're high stress and whatnot. After eating well and maintaining a daily exercise, you know, with the dog, and trying to live healthily, but still surrounded by stress, raising the cortisol. So, yeah, having problems losing weight, put on a lot of weight, and the only thing I can think is the cortisol levels.
Okay, yeah. Luigi, thoughts on cortisol?
Look, you know, cortisol is one of the stress hormones together with catecholamines. But interestingly, animals on calorie restriction that live longer, they have higher cortisol. So it looks like cortisol is one of the ingredients to longevity. Indeed, you know, if you remove the adrenal glands, that are producing cortisol, the cancer protective effect of calorie restriction disappears.
Oh, okay.
So, but I think, you know, it depends where the cortisol is coming from. Is coming from the diet or is coming from the stress? Because as I discuss in my book, you know, stress, depression, it's bad for health and for longevity. There are animals that we have manipulated the catecholamine pathway, and we know that, you know, when we lower these catecholamine pathways through genetic manipulation, these animals are living longer. So there is no doubt that stress, chronic stress, and we are living in a society, you know, where stress is a major problem. People are sleeping less and less and less. There is a lot of, you know, sleep fragmentation and deprivation. And that's a problem. That's a problem because we know that is impacting aging through different pathways.
Yeah. Yes. All right. 1-300-800-222 is the number. So elements of the Mediterranean diet are the scientifically established way of eating. And you cover a lot of this in your book, and you've got a lot of recipes in your book too, which are delicious. Exercise, we've talked about this a bit, but you're generally endorsing that, and the science endorses the idea of 30 minutes of moderate exercise a day, or alternatively every other day, as a way forward. You don't have to be running a marathon, but
no, absolutely not, absolutely not. Ideally, your exercise should be fun. You know, ideally, we should have, you know, meet with friends, you know, where, you know, you play, again, soccer, baseball, volleyball, you know, so that, you know, you move and you have fun. Ideally, that would be the ideal. But, you know, I bike 3-4 times a week, like probably an hour, so like 18K. I live in Mosman, and so every day or every other day I'll go biking, and then 2-3 days a week I do half an hour of some weightlifting at home, you know, with some weights. You know, you don't have to go to a gym and lift huge amount of weight. You know, you just want to keep, you know, your body in a good shape, you know, with, you know, some
And you should, you say you should do that as long as you can. I mean, into your 90s, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
The other element that you talk about is mindfulness, well-being, and this includes a thing about sleep, which I'm glad you mentioned, because I think all of us kind of know this. There is nothing more precious in the world than a good sleep.
Yeah.
And when you wake after a good sleep, you know it's done you good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, you can die of sleep deprivation. There are some diseases where, you know, people, they cannot sleep and they die.
Hmm. What else are you talking about under the heading of well-being?
Look, as we said, you know, sleep is important and is a symptom of stress, of, you know, some emotional, you know, issues. You know, people, maybe they don't realize they're overstressed and they are not able to cope, and then they have to overeat. They have to overdrink, or they have, you know, different type of habits, you know, as a response. It's like a dopamine boost.
Mm.
So if you are constantly stressed and depressed, or, you know, you have emotional issues, then to try to relieve, you know, this stress, you need anything that can boost dopamine. Can be alcohol, can be smoking, can be overeating, can be anything that, you know, it's boosting your dopamine. And I think, you know, that in our societies, we are always constantly thinking, and people have lost, you know, this capacity of calming down, taking some time, you know, to relax, to you know, meditate is a big word. You know, you have to meditate, but, you know, if you take your time, you to
we don't give ourselves enough time off.
Exactly.
Off,
absolutely.
No.
Yeah.
So
even if you walk,
I mean,
on the beach,
have as much sleep as you feel you need. Don't limit it.
And by the way, you know, there are beautiful studies now that if you don't sleep enough, it's one of the major factors in brain aging. You know, a friend of mine at Washington University is the head of the Department of Neurology, basically publishing Science in Humans, that if you don't sleep enough, your neurons keep firing and you have a deposition of beta amyloid. Beta amyloid is this toxic molecule that is causing dementia.
Ugh, okay. This is not the best message to be giving late night radio announcers, but there you are. Julie from Mount Waverley, just quickly. Hi, Julie, can you be quick?
Oh, yes, I can. Hello, Professor Phil.
Hi.
Professor, do you support taking metformin to lose weight if you're not a diabetic?
Luigi?
Look, you know, there are studies suggesting that metformin is... there are some colleagues of mine near Barzilai from the Albert Einstein University in New York who is raising... you know, $40 million to run this study on metformin, because he believes that metformin is in some way mimicking calorie restriction. Mm-hmm. So right now, again, you know, we are launching this study to prove that metformin can mimic calorie restriction. So right now, I think, based on what we know, I think people should take metformin only if they have diabetes and their doctor think that they need metformin. I wouldn't recommend metformin for aging, because we anti-aging, because we don't have the data. So let's wait for the studies, and once, you know, we're going to have the data, we can say yes or not.
Fair enough too. I wish we had several hours, Luigi. It's an area fraught with misinformation, as we know, and we've tried to clear the air as much as we can. Mediterranean diet, exercise, well-being, look after yourself. I know it's not rocket science, but it's there for you. And the manual of healthy longevity and well-being is out there. Luigi Fontana, Fontana, has been our guest. Luigi, it's been terrific talking with you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.